Hello, friends. I forgot to record the talk in church this morning, so I'm re-recording it at home. So excuse if it sounds very different in the background. But we're at Exodus chapter 20, verse 15. One of my first professional jobs was with a company that taught me how to steal. I just moved to Sheffield and started to look for jobs, and the graduate scheme I got taught me how to steal. I was working for a car rental company, and the thing all rental companies know is how to squeeze a bit extra from you. And so I was clearly and diligently taught how to bill an insurance company for a few extra days of hire, because, well, they'd never notice, right? So you'd keep the rental open for an extra few days, you'd bill an extra few hundred quid, and in the grand scheme of things, no one would check. That's not great, you might think, but that's a big company and no one likes insurers anyway, so that's not a big deal. But that wasn't all they taught me. You see, ripping off the insurers was one thing, but the customers could be squeezed a bit too. And so I was trained over and over how to basically scare people into taking some extra insurance they didn't really need. There were the other tricks too, billing the corporate clients for tanks of petrol, even if the car came back full, charging you for the tiniest of scratches, even if you were pretty sure it had been there a while. Not only was I taught how to steal, but I was rewarded for it as well. I was paid less than the rest if I didn't. It was without doubt the worst job I have ever had. You shall not steal. That is it, just four little words. It sounds so simple, we should be able to stop there, sing a song, grab some coffee. You shall not steal. Maybe you're sitting here and having been so challenged by the previous command, we can think to ourselves, oh, finally, we can breathe easily again. Of course, this is a command that's important for others to hear, but well, it doesn't have much to say to hard-working, ordinary people like us. It's so basic, so obvious, so universally agreed upon. And yet here is the thing. We have all broken this command. Every single person in this room and every single person on this planet. And God says it should not be so. We hear this, and yet, well, like all good barristers in a court, we hear what God says and we want to rise to our feet and shout to the judge, "Objection, Your Honour!" Because you see, the thing about stealing is that while we know it's wrong, we are experts in excusing ourselves. You'll see that handout on the back of your church. You'll see that heading on the back of your church friendly news sheet. We are experts in excusing ourselves. The CFO who embezzles billions, the thief who steals your car, the bank robber who makes the news, that's real stealing. But the stuff we do is not such a big deal, is it? If I happen to slip out of work a bit early, it's because I really need to. I mean, come on now, God's not going to pull us up about a paperclip, is he? Well, if you've got a Bible, jump back with me to the beginning and have a read of verse 1 again. God spoke all these words. I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. Do you remember? God is speaking to a people fresh out of slavery, with few possessions, a brand new society to begin. But the longer the Lord blessed them, the more material possessions they would own. And so before they've even unpacked their bags, God speaks to his people and says, you shall not steal. Let me highlight just a few facts that show how much we still need that message again today. You see, the World Economic Forum estimate that the cost of bribes each year is over $3.6 trillion. Cybercrime is estimated to cost $10.5 trillion in 2025 alone. And according to the National Fraud Office, economic crime in the UK costs £81 billion a year. And that is before you even try to value the theft of confidential business plans or software code. Businesses across the globe lose money when employees inflate their expenses. Fake bills are issued by suppliers. Equipment is borrowed by staff. And if all that seems a little bit detached from us, well, remember, you pay the price. With your burglar alarm and the insurance you need for your car and your home. Yet you pay the price with the extra tax needed to fund policing, the increasing prices in supermarkets as they have to cover the cost of shoplifting. In fact, did you know that in recent years, so many road signs have been stolen for scrap metal, they are now made of valueless fiberglass. They have those little stickers on that says, this sign has no scrap value. Now, hospitals and community centres now have to spend vast sums of money screwing everything down, padlocking anything remotely valuable, because they know it'll get nicked otherwise. And Netflix estimate that over 100 million households steal by sharing logins. And in a rather surreal twist, police surveillance cameras are now surrounded by anti-climb paint and barbed wire to prevent them being stolen. This command, it speaks to a big problem in our world. And yet each of us think the problem is out there. That's where we jump to our second heading. We see the root of all theft in wanting what's not mine. Like we can think the problem is out there, but the Bible says it's a problem in here, in us. And it's so big it makes the top 10 things he needs to command us about. Yeah, he says it to a people he's already rescued, them from slavery, us from sin, to people he's promised an inheritance in heaven that nothing can take away. So why are we tempted to steal? Well, we're physical people who prefer physical things, and yet heaven is annoyingly invisible. So we decide we might as well have treasure on earth as well. So if we see that company pen, we're happy to take it. Now, rather than use our own phone, well, it's cheaper to use the office one. The church photocopier is better than the one I've got at home, so I'll just print a few bits. And that Zoom meeting was dragging on, so I'll scroll through Facebook Marketplace instead. You know all of that's stealing, right? It's the hotel towel that's just much softer than yours. The trade will skip the tax man if you pay by cash. The expenses we just round up, or the additional work we claim on insurance. The extended coffee breaks we take, the sick leave where we choose when we're just a bit tired, or the Netflix password we have borrowed from a mate. And of course, you've got endless excuses as to why that's okay. You can justify how it's no bigger deal because times are hard and you work hard. In fact, the company owes you a little bit. But as good as our excuses might be, none of them can truly cover the fact that what we are doing is stealing. Working from home has made life so much more flexible, but also given us so many more ways to cheat. It's the same with self-checkouts, and it's not just hard up families. In fact, news reports from just this May said the biggest increase in shoplifting came from the over 50s. Let me read you what one lady said. As with murder and adultery, stealing is an expression of contempt. If I can steal from someone, I'm probably not going to pray for her or seek her good. Stealing says, my kingdom come, my will be done. It turns to my neighbour and demands, give me this day my daily bread. My friends, the great lie behind stealing is the belief that God doesn't see it and or God doesn't care about it. I think that's the functional belief we have. We live as if God is detached and distant, as if he doesn't know or care about the everyday little details of my life and yours. as if he doesn't see what my heart wants and my hand takes. But God is not blind and God is not stupid. He takes this far more seriously than we do. My friends, do not believe the lie that Jesus doesn't care about the everyday acts of treachery we commit by wanting and taking what's not ours. And if you're not yet convinced, let me ask you a few more questions. When you take something that's not yours, what are you saying about God? What are you saying about his promise to care from you? When we steal, we're effectively saying, God, what you've given me isn't enough. When we seek what isn't ours, we accuse God of failing us as a heavenly father. We are telling the world we know better than God, that he's not been generous enough, and we should jolly well be in charge for a while. We have a problem when I want what's not mine, and so the gospel solution is to share what is mine. I think that's the heart of all of this, that you shall not steal is far more than just a command about something I mustn't do. I think it also begins to point us towards the thing we must do. If we're tempted to think that God doesn't see or care, the Bible flips that like Greg with the burgers last week. God absolutely does see. He absolutely does care. And he says our relationship with him must impact the way we live in the world he's entrusted to us. Now have a look at this picture on the screen. Imagine you're staying here tonight in a hotel. Yeah, you see, hotels routinely lose towels, robes, even bed sheets. The lamps would probably go too if they hadn't been bolted down. In fact, that's precisely why they are bolted down. But because the hotel doesn't have feelings, we tell ourselves no real harm's being done. And because we're miles away by the time it's discovered, well, we feel safe swiping a few bits. But imagine you're staying with a friend or a relative instead. Think how differently you behave. Far from stealing the bed sheets, we take care to make the bed to fold a towel. We leave it better than it was when we arrived. Why? Partly because Mum knows where you live, so if you nick a towel, she'll come and get you. But more importantly, we act very differently because of the relationship we're in. Because we love the people we're staying with, we care for the resources they've given us. Do you see the overlap? Do you see how this command shapes not just what we don't take, but also what we now share? Jesus says we are stewards of God's resources. We are stewards and guardians, not owners. In the words of Philippians 2, we're to look not only to our own interests, but to the interests of others. Ephesians 4 says, anyone who's been stealing must steal no longer, but must work, doing something useful with their own hands, that they may have something to share with those in need. And just like Jesus, Paul reminds us that the Ten Commandments are not just rules to keep, but the way God's people love each other. And so let me give you two things to ponder. Firstly, are you living generously towards others? When you hear others praying for the Lord to provide their daily bread, does it ever occur that you might be the means through which God answers them? When you hear of someone who's lonely, does it draw you to consider whether your home, your time, your effort might be just the gift they need? Are you living generously towards others? Secondly, are you living generously towards God? Malachi chapter 3 gives a very clear warning that we can be guilty of robbing God when we fail to give generously to him. We rob God of his glory when we put our trust in our finances, not him. And we rob God when we claim our resources are ours rather than gifts from him to steward. I can't find the original source, but I always remember a quote a friend shared. He said this on the screen: "If I give nothing, I vote to close my church. If I give proportionately, I give something, even if out of necessity it's only small. If I give systematically, I allow my church to plan ahead. If I give sacrificially, I preach to myself that God is enough." The old preacher R. Kent Hughes once said, "Every time I give, I declare money doesn't control me." In fact, Jesus says that where your treasure is, your heart will be. So the reverse is also true. Where your treasure goes, your heart will follow. So if you're having a hard time getting your heart in the right place, send your money ahead of it. Give generously, sacrificially to God's work in the place he has put you, and you'll soon find your heart is interested in what's happening. Now, are you living generously towards others? Are you living generously towards God? Now, my friends, this is not bland. It is radical. It's not insignificant. It's massive. And it is seen in the small everyday decisions that each of us get to make. Wanting what's not mine, sharing what is mine. And now we land with our final heading: how to get what you really want. See, have you ever thought how much better life would be if everyone kept the Ten Commandments? Think what an amazing place the world would be if these ten rules were obeyed. We wouldn't need copyright laws or locks on our doors. We wouldn't need weapons and defence systems or courts and contracts and prisons. Yeah, you see, we pushed God's laws aside, but now we live in a society when we're scared to go out at night. We put our car keys in special boxes, fit alarms to our houses, and won't let our kids play on the streets. And in a particularly curious twist, we've come to accept a level of CCTV that was until recently only reserved for high security prisons. I'm sure you know the old joke that you'll never see a hearse pulling a removal van into the Kreml. We can't take our possessions with us. So if you want to be secure, if you want to have enough, if you want a treasure that never rusts, a retirement account that never loses value, then Jesus alone tells you where to get it. This command, like all the commands, makes Jesus our ultimate focus, because he alone can give what we truly want. And I guess this lands in two different places, depending on whether you're trusting Jesus or not. If you wouldn't say you're a Christian, or maybe you are and you feel convicted by your sin, the call to change should be hard. It should challenge and convict and rebuke. But remember Jesus' final words on the cross. Who was beside him? It was a thief. That's someone who had explicitly, repeatedly, blatantly violated this command. But when he turned for forgiveness, Jesus replied, "Truly I say to you, today you'll be with me in paradise." In that dying breath, Jesus gave the man an assurance of an inheritance better than anything he'd spent a lifetime trying to find. And if you are a Christian, have a listen to me, to the astonishing promise the Bible makes to you. 1 Peter chapter 1 says this: "God has caused us to be born again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, into an inheritance that is imperishable, undefiled and unfading, kept in heaven for you." And whether you are here for the very first time or you're faithfully here every week, my longing is that God might build in us hearts that long for holiness, that we might be a church family who love the Lord and are willing to put that on the line. My longing is that we might be a people who live this out in a way that others can't help but notice. So far more than something not to do, this should give us a model of the people we want to be. People of faithfulness who others know they can trust. People our bosses, neighbours, spouses, children know are people of integrity, both on a Sunday and on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday and Saturday. And this is radical in a world that's happy to cheat to get ahead. It's costly in a world that is happy to cut corners. It was so costly for me back in at that first job, but it's also holy and it's right in a world where God is ultimately sovereign, where Jesus is returning and where the Holy Spirit is at work to help and transform us. So let me hand over to you for a moment. How's this going to make a difference in your life? Now, what forms of stealing are you most likely to excuse? What's the functional belief that makes that acceptable? What makes it seem acceptable? And then how might this command make a practical difference to your life this week? Let me give you a moment and then I'll pray.